हरिः ॐ
सहनावतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिव सरि गौर भक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
Okay, page 61. Bhagavatam verse reference. Srimad Bhagavatam 2.9.17. The Lord was seated on his throne and was surrounded by different energies like the 4, the 16, the 5, and the 6 natural opulences, along with other insignificant energies of the temporary character. But he was the factual Supreme Lord enjoying his own abode. Footnote 27. Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur presents two versions of the list of Shaktis. The 4 Shaktis are Dharma, Jnana, Aishwarya, and Vairagya, and the personifications of the Rig, Yajra, Sama, and Atharva Vedas. These are described in the Padma Purana in the description of the center of Vaikuntha. The 16 Shaktis are, at the eastern gate, are Chanda, Prachanda. At the southern gate are Bhadra and Subhadra. At the western gate are Jaya and Vijaya. At the northern gate are Datta and Vidatta. In the direction starting from east, this is what is the next? Okay. From the east are Kumudaksha, Pundarika, Vamana, Shankukarna, Sarvanetra, Sumukha, and Supratishtha. Padma Purana 6, 228, 13 through 15. The 5 Shaktis are as follows. Kurma, Ananta, Garuda, who is Lord of the Vedas. The Vedic meters and all the mantras are situated in the form of the Pita. Right, so Kurma, Ananta, and Garuda, and then the Pita. Because Garuda is the Lord of the Vedas, and all the Vedic meters and mantras are situated as the feet with which he stands. Like that lotus on which he's standing, that's the pita, that's where he's... That's then the... all the Vedic meters and mantras. Padma Purana 6, 228-24. The 4 can also refer to Prakriti, Purusha, Mahatattva, and Ahankara. The 16 can refer to the 10 senses with the mind and the 5 gross elements, right? Because remember before it said, along with other insignificant energies of the temporary character. So that doesn't mean that they're not in the same forms. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense? So that's the thing with the Vedic mantras. They can say with one set of words meaning two things or many things. It's a common thing. So why would you say it over and over again? Right, so it's the same thing with insignificant. One is that it can be either the reflection of, or it's just the other, because everything's going to be working on the same patterns, same formulas. Just one will be the superior, one will be the inferior. Right? The 16 can refer to the 10 senses with the mind and the 5 gross elements. The 5 can refer to the 5 tanmatras. Sridhar Swami gives this explanation, which is acceptable. In this case, even Maya, along with Mahatattva and other elements, remained there, offering devotion to the Lord. Because right? everybody and everything is a devotee of the Lord. We're the only ones that are not. You have to kind of catch that at some point. We're thinking, no, everybody's like this, and this strange thing of the devotees and that. No, everything in the whole cosmos is devotees. We're the ones that are not. Yeah.
Rebellious.
Huh?
Rebellious.
Yes, rebellious. Yeah. I say, unfortunately, what do you call it? You know, here to stay. Yeah.
Like it says, talking about the intuition of a living being and beings. So even all these things are actual persons in their
Yes, they're all persons. because everything is the same, the point of the cause and effect. He's a person, therefore everything is personal. But he also has the impersonal aspect, so therefore the impersonal aspect's also there. So we take it that everything's impersonal, and then there's the personal. You know, the personal's first, and then the impersonal is situated on the person. So it's a feature of the personal. You know, because the person can be seen in a generic context. You know, and then there's the application, which then is personal. Does that make sense? So it's only, basically, you could say, in looking at it from the situation, that's where you would have the impersonal aspect. Yes. Application has to be personal. Results are going to be personal. The experience you get from that's going to be personal. So only when you look at situations, that's where you can consider it impersonal. Does that make sense? Just like you can say, okay, there's the people. That's impersonal, because it's generic. But if I'm going to interact with the people, I as a person are going to interact with individuals who are persons. You understand? So in other words, it's sat. Chit means you're interacting, so that means it's personal. Ananda means it's the result of that's interaction, that's experience, that's personal.
Sat is Brahman.
Yes, so sat is the Brahman aspect.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. If we take all the bhavas and apply them on that situation, is that possible?
The bhavas means?
Sai bhava, vi bhava, ni bhava.
Oh, sai, I thought you said all the bhavas, sai bhava, etc. He means sai bhava. Sai bhava, sakya sai bhava, shirdi sai bhava. All the bhavas. You don't get the connection.
No, I
do.
Okay. It's like Sai Baba would be sat existence because it's not changing.
Yeah, you can, but on that level you don't need to discern. See, that's the whole point, is that when you're dealing on the level of the rasa and these kind of things, they don't make the distinction. They don't distinguish between the shaktis. Like some did Sunday Nihladini, they don't make that distinction. It's just all the devotees are all there, so you don't do that thing. So it's not necessary to apply there. You can say is that being situated in a relationship with Krishna, then that's the sambandha. Then applying that in serving Krishna, that's the abhideya, and then aspect of expression of love of God, then that's your result. Like that. That's, you would generally apply it like that. You wouldn't try to break that down here, because there's no need. Because the point is when you're discussing rasa, it's about tasting. So we can only discuss the science of it, not the taste of it. So we're discussing the science, so we're aware of its existence. So in one sense, the whole thing that we're just discussing it, that's all sambandha. Right? Because then unless it's applied and tasted, then it's not. And that's not something you can describe. You know? So... in this case, even Maya, along with Mahatattva and other elements, remain there, offering devotion to the Lord. This can be explained by the fact that the spiritual world, composed of the Surup Shakti of the Lord, is the shelter of all Shaktis, including the material Shaktis. It has already been stated in verse 10 that Maya and her products cannot bewilder the Jiva in the spiritual world. This should be understood when the verse says that the place is not influenced by time. Kala Vikrama. Okay, so this is in 17. So 2910, I must have said that. So the Sarup Shakti means all the Shaktis, internal, external, and marginal. So that's why if you say the Lord is there with all his Shaktis, it's not it's not unacceptable. Right? Because they're all included. But they're all there as servants of the Lord. So all those aspects are there. And so then, because otherwise you can just describe him with his internal potencies and it's not a problem. Or you can describe him with the internal and the external, it's not a problem. Because the point is they're all part of the Srup Shakti. So that's the way he's pointing out that you have it where you're just describing the internal, but you can also describe with the internal and external.
So they are the original one.
The internal is the original.
For example, Maya is in the spiritual world, and when she...
Which means the original, meaning it's the superior. Because they're all there in the Srup Shakti. But the point is the internal is what is going to directly interface with the Lord. That's superior. You understand? So that's the natural form. The other form, they're there than themselves. So themselves being there is not the problem. They're the inferior, but they're there. So it's all eternal. The difficulty comes up where we'd use the concept of original is then when we're talking about ourself in relationship to those. So the original relationship is based on the devotion. Yes. And then taking up interaction with the external energy, then that's not natural.
Yes.
Does that make sense? Because just because Maya's there doesn't mean it's bad.
Yes.
It's bad when we relate to it and then we come under that influence. That's bad. But otherwise, Maya herself is a devotee.
Yes.
So... This should also be understood when Brahma saw Krishna's expansions as Vishnu forms. But remember when in Brahma Vimohan, then all the forms of the cowherd boys, the cows, then they all took on, and then everything is there worshipping. Then all the grass, everything is worshipping. All the Vishnumurtis were surrounded by the opulences, headed by Anima City, by the mystic potencies, headed by Aja, and by the 24 elements for the creation of the material world, headed by the Mahatattva. So then they're all there also. So it's not that it's a problem. They go together. So with Brahma, it would be brought out more because he's dealing with it. So then when he sees that everybody's serving Krishna, even all the elements that he's working with, they're also, it's not that, you have this energy and I'm the devotee and I'm engaging it. No, they're also devotees and they're worshipping, and then you want to take part in that process, you can.
But in our position, we say that we are trying to worship Krishna and we use the energy. And
yes.
Not that the energy is already serving Krishna and we are taking part in it.
But that's what's happening. Let's say you have a pot, okay? In a sense, pots are popular in the Vedanta, in the Chandogya Upanishad. So you have this pot. So this pot, then it has its inherent nature, right? Based on clay, based on earth, then going back. Then there's the primary creation of a pot and what a pot can do. So that's part of the Lord, and that's always serving the Lord. Now, we can take part by engaging this specific pot in the Lord's service. But the principle, the potness of it and the pothood, those are already engaged in Krishna's service. Does that make sense?
So we're talking about primary and secondary. We engage
yes.
the secondary.
We're engaging the secondary, but the primary is already connected. And the nature of the secondary is to support the primary. Because there isn't such a thing as a separate secondary. You can't have that. It's like saying that you could have separate electricity from the generator. There's no such thing. So that's the whole thing, is when we come to that understanding, then it's not that, okay, I'm doing this, and then there's this alternative reality. No, there is the actual reality, and then there's the alternative of not accepting that. It's like the government runs the place. The criminal doesn't accept that, but it doesn't mean that his reality is actually what's going on. It's real for him, but in actuality, the government is there. Is that? The Lord was also endowed with his natural powers, Svai Bhagai, and the temporary powers, Ad Dhruvai. Of Brahma and others, itaratra, He saw the Lord who enjoys in Vaikuntha Dhaman with his own form, Sve, Svardhartha Darshani, 2917. Right? So he's seeing all that. Right? So even though these are energies he works with, so you call them his energies, they're actually not, they're actually servants of Krishna. So they're his quota to work with in his service to Krishna. Does that make sense? Okay, Srimad Bhagavatam 2.5.14. The five elementary ingredients of creation, the interaction thereof set up by the eternal time, and the intuition of nature or the individual living beings are all differentiated parts and parcels of the Supreme Lord, Supreme Godhead, Vasudeva. And in truth, there is no other value in them. So all these ingredients, shaktis, whatever is there, the only value they have is their connection to Krishna. They're not connected to Krishna, what's the value? Like probably gives the example, is that, let's say you have hair, okay? So as long as it's on your, you know, on your body, on your head, it's valuable. But as soon as you cut it, it's thrown away. There's no value to it. Does that make sense? That's the whole point. So that's how it works. The energies, when they're connected to Krishna, they're of value. But when we, due to illusion, try to separate them, they have no value. Because their actual value is their connection to Krishna. Because that way they're non-different from Krishna. That's their value. Does that make sense? So in other words, it comes to a point where you just see it as everything connected to Krishna. Rather than, okay, there's what I'm doing in the whole scene in the world and everything that I know, and then there's these kind of funny Hare Krishnas with their bed sheets and bald heads and that kind of jazz. And, you know, as an alternative kind of reality that I could take shelter of if there's a need, and when things are going great in my world, I don't have to. Right? So, no, it's that this is the reality. And then you start to see everything connected to the Lord. That's what's being offered. Right? That you can always see it connected to the Lord. Now, we may be doing that not based on the platform of prema, but in pursuance of. We may be doing it as jnana yoga. But the point is why are we engaged in jnana yoga? To get to pure bhakti. Right? To prema. Right? So, that's the tool we're using. Because on the platform of prema, it's not that this goes away. It's just now it increases, and so now you see it all in connection with Krishna based on your love for Krishna. Mother Jashoda sees everything in relationship to Krishna on how she can serve him in that parental rasa. You know what I'm saying? So anything she sees, there's a nice place, like, oh, Krishna could sit here, we could do these things for him, or, you know, see some nice design, oh, we can make an ornament like that for Krishna. You know, or some nice cloth, oh, that would be nice for Krishna. Or, you know, the new vegetables come in season, oh, well, can I get those for Krishna? You understand? So she'll see everything in love for Krishna in specific of her affection for Krishna. Does that make sense? So that's what will happen. So that's what's being offered. That's what we're discussing here. So again, back to the point. Why all this technical point? Because then you could always be Krishna conscious. That's why all the technical points. So what is being addressed are all those little technical points that keep us from remembering Krishna, right? Because we think the effect is different from the cause. The material world is here. It's here for us to enjoy. It has nothing to do with the cause of the Supreme Lord, right? Does that make sense? That's the general materialist. And then even the religious materialist, he'll say, yeah, it came from God, but now it's here, now it's ours. And he has nothing to do with it. You know, we're just supposed to be nice guys when we deal with it, but it's ours. You know, it's like, you know, God gave us this land, not this is God's land. You know, you don't hear any country saying, this is God's land. They'll say, God gave us this land.
They say, God's land, but we occupy that, so it's ours.
Oh, it's ours, okay.
A few more steps.
Yeah, a few more steps, but you know, that's old, and most of the other countries don't accept that principle. So, like that. But the main point is, it's ours, not theirs. God gave it to us, not them.
That's the emphasis.
Huh?
That's the emphasis.
Yeah, that's the emphasis. Yeah, whether it's ours or not, but he gave it to us.
So much. Actually, what is the relation between the...
What is it? God shed his grace on thee, you know, means on the land, not on the guys that were living there before we came, right? You know? Sorry, go ahead.
So what is the relation between the... I did not understand the intuition is part and parcel of Krishna in the Bhagavatam. Intuition of nature, individual soul.
Where are we looking?
It's been in verse 2.5, 14.
Oh, in the verse itself?
Yes, in the verse, yes. The intuition or nature...
Oh, interaction. Thereof set up by eternal time and the intuition of nature of the living beings are all differentiated parts and parcels. So the intuition or nature of the living beings, so the living beings and their consciousness and their how they perceive everything and all that is differentiated parts and parcels. So it means the jivas and the external energy are differentiated parts and parcels. They're part of the Lord, so they're not different in that, but they're differentiated in that they're conscious differently. It means they're situated differently. So that's why you can be conscious of what's going on around, not that you're just part of the... You know what I'm saying? So it's like your hand is not separately conscious of what's going on. You know, you're conscious and the hand therefore is part of that. But then separated means they're conscious on their own. You know what I'm saying? Just like, let's say, the child is part of the body, but at the same time, the child, being differently situated, is conscious.
Yes.
And you interact as a different entity, even though technically they're the same.
Okay.
Right? Because here it says intuition or nature.
Yes.
So nature then defines what intuition is.
It is the same?
Means in this case it says and the intuition or nature.
Yes.
So it's meaning, you know, they're giving two different words to mean the same, to indicate the same thing. But intuition is more of what you do with the nature. But the point is you'll act according to nature in your intuition.
Oh yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Srimad Bhagavatam 2.6.31. All the material manifestations of the universes are therefore situated in his powerful material energies, which he accepts self-sufficiently, although he is eternally without affinity for the material modes. So he accepts them, but in his self-sufficient, because he has nothing to gain from them. Right? So the point is, so what we're gaining from here is the secondary attributes aren't what attracts Krishna. It's the primary of the devotion.
Yes.
Right? So on the material platform, it's just secondary. So that's not attractive. We're attracted by it because we think the secondary can function separate from the primary and has a value even though it's separated. But it doesn't, because it gives no satisfaction to the soul. If it did give satisfaction, why are we all sitting here? We'd be out at a party somewhere. Right? Or just going home from a party. Does that make sense? Yes.
So Krishna is especially pleased with this, because like yesterday you were talking about the importance of action, your activities. And so because we have all these secondary ingredients, even our intuition and things like that, when we do engage those in Krishna's service, then Krishna, of course, is pleased because it's a holistic offering.
Yes, but it's not the secondary that's attractive, it's the bhakti. Because if the bhakti is there, then it means without, let's say, you know, from general perception, without ingredients, just you're thinking about Krishna and absorbed in Krishna, that pleases Krishna.
Mm.
But at the same time, you are engaging the mind, which is a secondary aspect.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? But, you know, we don't, I'm just saying, you know, in general usage, we would say, okay, he's using nothing. So that's then, it's attractive to Krishna. But the things themselves aren't attractive. But when the thing is used in Krishna's service, like you said, then it's holistic. You don't need to make a distinction. So Mother just showed us lunch. You just see it as devotion. We don't see it as, you know, potatoes and, you know, cauliflowers and all that kind of stuff. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. And please no one bring up that cauliflowers are not Vedic. Just go with the thing. I say. You're not going to bring up San Marzano tomatoes? Or, yeah. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
So that's the point, is you don't need to make the distinction. We only have to make the distinction when we've made the distinction. But if we don't make the distinction, we see it all in connection with Krishna, his service. There's no need to make the distinction. But because we haven't made a distinction doesn't mean there isn't a distinction. Because there's the uniqueness, the visesha. Right? It's in existence, it's all Krishna, but at the same time it's got a uniqueness because it's different from another aspect of Krishna. And so therefore that difference, that's what then makes things nice. Because if there's no difference, what's the niceness?
And so that's why, if we're following the instruction of the spiritual master, even though our mind isn't completely there, because we're actively engaging things in Krishna's service, and gradually the mind will.
Yes. That's why we just stick to the process. By that association, we'll become purified and we'll start to take up an interest in seeing things in this way.
Mm-hmm.
So. Yeah, because you notice here is that here is a very technical point, no? But what canto is it from? Second canto. Right, you know, right down there. This was sixth chapter, and the previous ones were fifth chapter, ninth chapter. So we've already discussed this in the second canto, but there's probably a good chance we don't remember any of that, or we're aware of that. So these points have been discussed all along. From Gita, but now we're starting to become aware of them. So it's not that there's different subject matter, it's the same thing, you just get finer and finer. Does that make sense? There's no new philosophical points than what's given in Gita. It's just that we're getting finer and finer details and understanding of it.
And now we can try to change our perspective.
Yes, the whole idea is to change the perspective, that we just see it all connected to Krishna. And now it's just a matter of how to connect it, how to apply that. You know, so the acharyas, then they give the methods, what's recommended. Right? Because what do you recommend? You know, what works, or what works in generally, or what's the easiest that you won't make a mistake with. Does that make sense? You know, just like, let's say, you do something with, sliced bread. Okay? You take a slice of bread, this, that. So, that makes it easier. Someone who doesn't know anything. But then you could say, well, couldn't you take a loaf that's not sliced and then slice it? You could. But someone who doesn't know anything, how's that going to work out?
Yeah.
You know? Now, whether they actually get to the preparation because they didn't cut their finger, that would be actually pretty good. Does that make sense? So that's why you just say, do this. Not that the other can't be done, but this is what works. And because they've recommended, we want to stick to that. You know, and then when we get on their level, there may be these varieties. But the point is what they've recommended is also part of the process. Because even if they cut the bread, you're still dealing with a slice. But until you know how to make a slice, just use this, you know. Does that make sense? So that's why we give this. This whole idea is, no, we're more advanced, we don't have to use. But the point is those who are more advanced still are using it. It's just that they understand it, they can apply it. But, Sutra 2:117. Asad vyapadeshan neti chen na dharman tarena vakya seshat. Asat, non-existence. Vyapadeshat, because of the designation. Na, not. Iti, thus, chet, if. Na, not. Dharma antarena, on account of another attribute. Vakya seshat, because of the complementary passage. You say that scripture says that asat, non-difference of effect in the cause.
Non-existence.
Oh, non-existence. What did I say? Non-effect.
Non-difference.
Where did I get the difference?
No. It's always
non-difference. Oh, okay. It's always non-difference. Just think of the word somewhere else that I bring it up. Or something. Non-existence of effect in the cause. Existed in the beginning, the answer is no. Because the last sentence indicates a different quality, non-manifestation. Right? So they're going to say, that they're still on the point that the what is manifest from, you know, if we're saying that Brahman is the cause, and then the material is the effect, that quality is the effect, then they're still trying to say it doesn't exist in the cause.
Yes.
They're still holding on to that one. Yes. So we're taking a different angle. You know, because there might be some things where asat is talked about, but it's not this point they're talking about. It means that there's, like what we said before, although he is eternally without affinity for the material modes. That's the meaning of it. Mm-hmm. Sutra Prakashika. Herein, the Sutrakar presents with the meaning of the word asat, to be existing in a different form, subtle form. As implied by the word dharman tarena in the current sutra. Also, there's the plausible removal of doubt based on shastra. Shugovindabhasya. Let that be. Previously it was said, like, in other words, when the conversation comes up, you get into a point that they don't know what to do with, then they just go, okay, let that be. We're going back to this point here. You know? So it works both ways. One is they're saying something bogus,
yes,
and you deal with that, and then they shift to another one, you know, going to forward. Then you can use the same thing. Let's leave that one for right now. Let's get back to that one that we were just discussing.
And Prabhupada uses that.
Yeah, he uses that a lot. Because that's the whole point, is there's an essential point. If you catch that, then everything else will be clear. But they avoid that because that will then destroy their whole philosophy. But here they've done it is that you've defeated them on that point, and then they have, but they made a point before based on something that they say supports theirs, and we've, you know, in this thing, defeated in this way, but they'll go back to it because they have another way of presenting it. You know, so we won't deal with this form of it. We'll take another. You understand? Yeah. So just know these are the tricks. Previously it was said, Asad va idam agra asit. Taittiriya Upanishad 2.6.1. Right? Because you see in all this discussion here, all the argument is on the points of Upanishads. Because Vedanta Sutra is then giving the essence of the Upanishads. And so then if you're discussing philosophy, it has to go back to the Upanishads. Means for those who don't accept, you know, the Vaishnava literatures or other things like that. So in here, then, it's something that if you can take it back to there's no problem. Just like we saw, there was that one, they wanted to have a debate with the Vaishnavas, with the Gaudiyas. But they said you can't use, the Puranas and that. And you just can't get back until he said, you can only use the Veda, which means the Upanishads. And Bhaktisiddhanta agreed to that, no problem. I'm not sure if they said you can't use Upanishad. I don't remember how far back they took it. But he agreed however far back they went. So in other words, the Vedas, all they talk about is serving Krishna. And so when they saw that he didn't have a problem in just, you know, dealing in that level, then they dropped the debate was cancelled. Right. So then this is here. So we see here is done. Bhaktivinoda Thakur will do it in his various works.
I think. Devadharma is very Jaiva Dharma.
Jaiva Dharma does that, Tattva Sutras. I mean, Tattva...
Vivek.
No. Chaitanya Shiksha Amrita. He'll do it here and there. The Mahaprabhu or Siksha, it's simply the Dasamul based on the Upanishads. Like that. Okay. Thus, the effect was asat, non-existent in the beginning. The effect was not present in the material cause. Right? Because they're saying the effect wasn't there, and so now it is. So that means it couldn't have been there before. We say it didn't exist, and now it does. That means in its position of non-existence, it can't exist, so it has no connection with the cause. Mm-hmm. Right? That's the point. But the point, yeah. Siddhanta, that is not so. So just as they say, let that be, that is not so.
No, samsaya means argument. What is samsaya mean?
Shamshaya means the doubt.
Yeah.
Uttara means they're giving here. It's a doubt, but it's so short, you don't have to say shamshaya uttara. Because the doubt, you know, they're using it as their point, but they're not expanding. So what is it? Shamshaya and then? What's their argument?
Purvapaksha.
That's them giving their explanations, reasons, explanations, and everything like that. But if they're just presenting their doubt, which is enough here, then that's all. Then it's just called the shamshaya. So sometimes you see shamshaya and purvapaksha, or sometimes you just see shamshaya uttara. But when the last uttara, that would be the siddhanta. So since here there's only one, then it goes from shamshaya to siddhanta. Does that make sense?
Yes.
So, Siddhanta, that is not so. The word asat does not mean total non-existence, but existing in a different way. Dharmantarena. Right? Because that was, what is dharmantarena? On account of another attribute. The word sat and asat refer to the gross and subtle states of one's substance as effect and material cause. Right? So then, we're going back, we take the subtle as the principle here. So here then, the spiritual aspect and that, the Lord and his aspects, so that's the part that's there. Then there's the manifestation of that. Just like we said before, there's in the primary creation, there's the concept of a pot. So that principle is eternal. But the manifestation of a specific pot, that's temporary. Does that make sense? So therefore the sat and asat. You know, and then that sat comes from the original sat. Right? Because the pot is holding things. But Krishna is holding everything. So here, the word sat and asat refer to the gross and subtle states of one's substance as effect and material cause. Here, the word refers to the subtle quality different from the gross quality of the object. Why? Because of the sentence at the end of the passage. Vakya se shat. Tadatmanam swayam akuruta. Akuruta. That made itself by itself. Taittiriya Upanishad 2.6.1. This statement removes doubt about the statement in the beginning. Asat va idam agra asit. Something non-existent, asat, could not make itself by itself. It's not out of nothing, then you get this hand and then another hand and then it starts putting itself together and then, you know, how you say, reaching around the back, picking itself up and, you know, like that. No, it doesn't do that. Sorry?
Only comes
with
the
yes, only here. Yeah. Yeah, I think only cartoons, right? As well, something non-existent cannot be expressed in time, and it is impossible to speak of a non-existent entity doing something, making itself. Right? Because it's non-existence, it's not in time. To make something, it requires time. So how could it make itself if there's no time and there's no existence? Because there's a transformation of existence, then you can get one thing into the next. But if there's nothing, how do you get something? So that's, does that make sense? So in other words, you have the Lord Shakti, which is the internal, it transforms into the external. And then the varieties of the external are just further and further transformations. Does that make sense? So that's going on, so transformation works. But this thing that there's nothing, because there you have existence, and then with and therefore there's time, and then with that, then there's transformation. But if there's no existence, there's no time, there's nothing to work with, and there's no time in which work could be done. So that's why this, remember before, if we go back a few sutras, then because their argument wasn't working, then they'll say, you know, when you say, well, where does pradhan come from? You say, from nothing. Yes. So that's where the importance of this, because that's the basis of their pradhan. Because otherwise, they're happy to just say it comes from pradhan. But if you say, where does pradhan come from? Since it is an energy, you can't ask that. Mm-hmm. When you're talking about Brahman, then you can't ask that. Right? So, but with Shakti, you can ask, where does it come from? Because Shakti always comes from Shaktiman. So then, they don't want to take it back to Brahman. Right? Because they think that it'll make impure, so then they'll say it's nothing. But the point is nothing, there is nothing, there's no time, so there can't be any transformation. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Maharaj, they accept pradhan as the material cause?
Yes.
But they don't accept Brahman?
No. They accept that Brahman's there, but they don't see any connection between the two. Brahman is one thing, pradhan is something else.
And I think I asked you this before, but I still don't understand. So what do they say the Brahman is?
Just what anybody on the material platform would say. Just unlimited and unchanging.
But it's not the source of anything?
It appears not. Otherwise it was the source, then we'd have, you know, something more in common to discuss.
Then I mean, in their minds, what is it besides just something that's undifferentiated?
But that's it. That's all the more you can understand with a materialistic mind. You can't understand beyond that.
So when it's brought up, Brahman's brought up in the Vedas.
For the materialist, that's all the more they get, but they know it's higher than other things.
So maybe they confuse it with the pradhan.
No, there's Brahman and there's the pradhan. Like that. They're not confusing the two. They're just confused about pradhan and the nature of Brahman and how their connection there. Because they don't want to go beyond that.
So when
it's just like, let's say, child wants a cookie. Right? And they say they want a cookie. And mother says, no, but you can't have a cookie now. But yesterday you said I could have a cookie. You know, mother will say that's yesterday and all that, but you said it was okay. So eating cookies is not actually a thing that's improper. It's actually a bona fide thing. So why not now? You know, in other words, they're not going to accept that was in the afternoon or this or that and the timing or something else or any of the conditions on which that was there. They just see it, I want a cookie, and before I could have a cookie, so that's all. They don't look at anything else. So that's the whole point, is the materialistic platform means if you separate the primary from the secondary, you look at the secondary on its own how you want. So the whole principle is you don't want to look at it in connection with the primary. That's material consciousness.
Mm-hmm. So when Brahman is brought up in the Vedas, they just like gloss over it.
No, they don't. It means Brahman is there, but it's not important for what they're trying to do. You know, it's just like the day-to-day person. Do they know the government's there? The average person on the street in the country, a citizen of a country, do they know that there's a government?
Yeah, but they also know how it functions.
As much as they do, but do they care in their day-to-day work?
No, not unless it's brought up.
But the point is it doesn't matter to them. They can get up, you know, how you say, brush their teeth, run their comb through their hair, you know, and before that say a prayer. All these things they can do. Right? And they'll go, they'll drink their coffee, they'll get in their bus, they'll walk across the street, You know what I'm saying? They'll do all these things. It doesn't matter to them about the government. The government's there.
Right, you're not breaking the law.
Yeah, because, yeah, but my point is it doesn't matter to them because that's not what they're trying to do. It's not part of their, it's not important. It's not part of their world. So even though it's there and the reason that, you know, cars drive here and this and that's because of the government, they just don't, it doesn't matter. It's just they want to get to work, so you drive. So you had to drive on this side, fine, it doesn't matter. Go to the next country, you drive on the other side.
Especially in India, like every state, sometimes government changes every day.
Yeah, like, you know, so who cares? You know? Does that make sense? You know, like that. So therefore, it doesn't matter to them. You know, the kids are playing baseball in the living room. It doesn't matter about all these other things. It's their world. You can stop them and point out that this is the living room. This is not where you play baseball. You know, and then there might be, oh, okay, yeah, but it doesn't matter. They just want to play baseball.
But because there's so many references to Brahman, they must have some attitude towards it.
It's just that it's there. Just like the average person doesn't have any attitude towards the government. It's a small group of people that are activists and worry about the government and all this. They just don't care. You know what I'm saying? Some individuals are. They're political. They're all totally into it. They always sit around and, well, what do you think of this and that? And that's all they do. But they don't care about other things. Like, you know, does that make sense? What other people care about. Like having friendships or anything, you know, like that. Does that make sense? It's just whatever is your world, that's what you're into. That's the point. So because they don't, just accept that they don't. You can make them aware of it and all that. That's what we're trying to do here. But don't be surprised that materialists are materialists.
No, I'm just surprised they don't have any conception of it at all.
But they have a conception of it as unlimited and that it's just there. Because it's unlimited and unchanging, what has that got to do with you?
Because the Veda says it's the basis of creation.
But they don't accept that. They interpret it differently.
So they think it's something else than what the Vedas are talking about.
No, it's what the Vedas are talking about, but they interpret it according to how they see it. They see it in, they have their, where it categorizes, and that's where it is.
But they still don't see it as Pradhan, because they accept Pradhan.
Pradhan, no. Pradhan's one thing, and Brahman's another. So in other words, you just have to accept, that's just the way they think. That's why there's a different school, because if they thought the way we were, then why we have to have this discussion? That's the whole thing. So you can come up with basically six fundamental different perspectives of philosophy from the materialistic platform. So Vedanta Sutra deals with those six and all the elements that they're based on. So that's what's going on. That's what the discussion is.
Because of their materialistic consciousness, accept Shakti is okay, but as soon as the concept of Shaktiman comes, then we are.
Then that's the problem, because then they're thinking that Shakti, if there's coming from there, then the Shakti, the attributes will have an effect on the Shaktiman. They don't understand the transcendental position of the Shaktiman.
And even in the case of Brahman, Brahman as a situation is still okay because it's not going to affect us.
Yes.
But when we say Brahman as an active thing, then.
Then that's a problem, because then now we have to bring our line and life in line with Brahman. Well,
yes.
Otherwise, we just have to bring our life in line with Pradhan.
Yes.
And so then it maintains our materialistic view, because if we have to bring in line with Brahman, we have to actually take up a transcendental position. You know? So even if they talk about transcendental, it's only as much as gives liberation. It's not about you know, bhakti. Because the fundamental principle is people want to be the controller and the triumph. Okay? Mm-hmm.
Maharaj, it is so, it is very deep, this idea and the controller.
Yes, yes. So that's what the literature Shastra is doing, is, you know, philosophically and all that, attacking it from different angles. Then the Dharma aspect and the rules and regulations are trying to keep us to follow those activities that are favorable to being in line with bhakti. Right? And then you have the positive aspects of bhakti to show us the relationship with Krishna. Right? So all these different aspects we're doing. So in other words, the Sambandha is pointing out what's actually the reality. Abhideya, we're engaged in devotional activities whether we appreciate them or not. And the Prayojana is that, therefore we're trying to develop that devotion. Does that make sense? So by the Lord performing his wonderful pastimes, that attracts us. Like that. And then we're engaged in similar kind of activities that are favorable. And then we learn what's proper, what's not proper by the philosophy. So,
here it's very clear because the philosophical differences are vast and obvious. When we take, for example, the devotee society, sometimes it seems that we also have differences, mostly on the culture, but sometimes it's also a philosophical understanding.
Between
the devotees. Like, for example, where the jiva is coming from and the creation, they just take the part and emphasize that part more, emphasize this.
They just
part.
Take parts whatever they like.
So it's not a philosophical deviation, it's a cultural deviation.
And it's confusing when you use cultural deviation as if the deviation is actually cultural. You know, it has some culture. You know,
deviation and culture.
Yeah. That's it. What's that? What do they call the distortion? You know, you have the culture that's presented in the Shastra, and then we have a distortion of that. No, you could say that they're philosophical points because they're not willing, but the point is since it's the same point, they're trying to fit it into time and space. So if you take the soul, it's a matter of time and space. You know? So then, that's the difficulty. You know, if you're taking about, interaction with, that means taking initiation from Prabhupada, even though he's not here or not, that's actually a matter of control. Because if you don't need gurus, then the temple president is, you know, the authority. You understand? So it's a problem if the guru's an authority and they're not. So they don't want that. They want to be the authority. So they're the one that say, okay, you're connected to Prabhupada and all that. And so anyway, that, they make themselves the guru. So you could say that's more of a cultural kind of thing. But in one sense, it's wrong. They don't understand the philosophy. But these two aspects, these are unimportant. That's why they're not meant to be discussed. You know, like that. It's just not done. You don't have that. Because otherwise, why Prabhupada? Why not? I like Narad Muni. I'll take initiation from him. You know what I'm saying? Why it's, you can only do that with Prabhupada. If you can do that with Prabhupada, you can do it with everybody. You know? Oh, who are you a disciple of? Well, you know, I really like the, you know, Vadiraj Tirtha, you know, like that. Huh? Yeah, Krishna, he's the original guru, like that.
Here, I heard someone say, Sukadeva Goswami is original guru, I follow him. Sukadeva Goswami is original guru because he wrote Bhagavatam, and I follow only him.
Okay, yeah, I only follow him. Yeah.
Yes. Means then he can interpret Bhagavatam.
Yeah, as he likes. So only those parts of the whole first canto he doesn't have to follow because that's Sukadeva Goswami. Right? Yeah. So only when it says Sukadeva said, then he'll listen. When it says Sutta or Vyas or, you know, anyone else, then yeah. Yeah, so all it is the same principle. It's just what supports what you want to do. Then that's what you accept and everything else you don't. So that's why then we keep moving it back. Like that, to the principal points.
Yes. Like that.
Okay, footnote 28. The BBT gives a purport to the current sutra 2.1.17, explaining the accurate Vedantic understanding and Mayavadi's misapprehension on the words sat and asat. In one sense, the visible world is real, sat, while in another sense, it is not, asat. The substance of this universe is solid fact, being the Lord's external energy, right? Because it's there, it exists, and it has its uniqueness. But the forms that Maya imposes on this substance are only temporary, right? Though existing, but temporary. And because material forms are temporary manifestations, those who consider them permanent are an illusion, right? So the living entities that are attached, they'll consider them to be with his phone, riding on the elephant, checking out his phone.
Yes.
Contemporary
mode.
Huh? Contemporary
mode. Yeah, contemporary mode, yeah. So, and because material forms are temporary manifestations, those who consider them permanent are an illusion. Right? So, the common person thinks, I get money, it's eternal. You know, I have a friendship with someone, that's eternal.
Yes.
You know, I'm here, I'm situated in my place, it's all going to go on forever. That's illusion. It's going to stop at some point, it's just a matter of when. It's just a matter of is it today or tomorrow. Does that make sense? So everything in the material world is like that.
This aspect of jiva considering external energy, to be permanent, in one sense the internal, so then there is the aspect of illusion comes.
Illusion, because if you think the particular manifestation is the eternal, and that's the actual point you appreciate, that's the illusion. Because it exists, but if that particular manifestation is temporary, but what you're appreciating in it, that's the Lord, that's the eternal part. So that's why we feel it's eternal, because we're perceiving the Lord, but we're mistaking that, the illusion, that we think, no, the external form my senses are perceiving, that's the eternal.
So, in Jaiva Dharma, Bhaktivinoda Thakur categorizes Maya Devi has two energies. One is the external energy itself, and another is avidya, ignorance. So is this the active principle which is in the illusion is a part of that?
What did you say, the other external? Yes, it comes down because there's two potencies, the covering and the throwing. So she covers with ignorance, and then she throws you into the varieties of the material thing. So avidya is there, that's before the modes, is that you're ignorant of your relationship with the Lord. Then in that position, in that ignorance, then one comes into the material, and then one is controlled by the modes of nature. Does that make sense? So that's why we're studying vidya and avidya together, is that we see is that vidya means it's connected to the Lord. Avidya is the concept that it's not connected to the Lord. So how do people think it's not connected? How is it actually connected?
Because we need to say, where is the illusion?
Where is the illusion? Yes.
Rather than people think to study avidya means to get into the details.
Yeah, no. To study avidya means to understand what is the illusion. How is it an illusion? Because that's why for preaching, then you don't have to work outside the area that the person is interested in. They have a value in an area. See, the problem is they think that external thing is their value. No, it's the Lord's potency, the universal form, that aspect that is attracting them. So as long as that attraction is there, then they think, but they apply that attraction and value onto the object, as opposed to the object is the medium for the actual. So that's why then you can talk about whatever they're talking about, but you're bringing out the principal aspect and showing the connection there. So it's not that they have to shift their areas. You understand? That's actually Vedantic preaching. Mistake is made in soft preaching, that I don't talk about the principal, I only discuss the secondary. But because the modern secondaries aren't so great, then maybe I'll use a Vedic secondary. Though when it's brought up about, you know, how you say it's Vedic, so it's there, but we don't actually follow. We only follow it because of its value in the modern culture. Right? You know, so you get this funny thing. So it's about the secondary and that rather than about the primary. So then it's think, oh, you can't do these Vedic secondaries. You know, how you dress, eat, and act, because they won't understand it. But the point is
they come from the Muslims anyway.
Huh?
They say they come from the Muslims.
Yeah, yeah. You know, it's just like the Muslims came in, what, 1,000 years ago or something? 1,200, 1,400 years ago? Something like that. And before that, all the Vedic stuff that they're talking about here and all that then didn't exist. Genghis Khan used to wear a dhoti, right? And his wife wore a sari. So when they came into India, they introduced that, you know, and covering the head and all that, because it wasn't done before. It comes down to the same position. They don't want to accept that there's an authority on this, and therefore these things have to be done in relationship with authority. The point is no, we're modern people, that's the authority. So what modern people do, that's what we do. Does this make sense? And so we don't want to accept the Vedic authority, because then we might have to change what we do, and I don't want to do that.
I'd have to put on a burden.
Yeah, so then we only accept that which supports our philosophy. So if we take it that it's not Vedic, see, it's like this. If we work on that, what is left in India is just the remnants of Vedic. It still has some connection. You're like, what the smartest do is the activity may be bona fide if it's based on Shastra, but what's not bona fide is it's not done in devotion. Right? But if I can show, so that means then the activities they're doing I might have to do. Right? Because it's connected with the Shastra, and therefore all I have to do is add the devotion. But because I don't want to do that, all I have to say is, oh, but they're just, you know, that's just a local thing, that's their interpretation. You know, it was introduced by the Muslims. So, therefore, then I don't need to follow that, because it's just an Indian, India is a country, and they do something, and America's a country, and we do something. So therefore, you know, since, you know, we're not at this point going to say America's better than India, but we're just at this point in the discussion go, they're just two countries, and since we're from America, we'll follow American stuff, and Indians can follow Indian stuff. Right? But at the same time does that make sense? So that's the argument, because then you take out the authority, because you're not connecting it back to the Veda. You've taken the Vedic thing and now just turned it into India, and then it's just a country. And so it's just a country like so many other countries. And so therefore I just do what's in my country. Right? And according to the song, this is God's country and, you know, all that. So, hey, we're good. But now if we want to go into, continue this soft preaching aspect, and then we're going to have to, therefore we need something universal to connect everybody. And what's more universal than American culture? You know, Indian, definitely not. American. But I would guarantee you, I mean, I could probably put down money, that if it came push to shove to a European, continental European materialist, and it came down to a cultural thing that was Indian or was American, they would take the Indian any day over the American. Guaranteed.
Yeah.
Right? You know what I'm saying? You could give a samosa or something to the French guy, and he would go, interesting, you know, he may or may not do that. He'd look at the, you know, the pastry and the, you know, and this and that, how they did the inside and how they would put more butter in it and stuff like that, you know.
Like fried that.
Huh? Fried in butter, you know, a little bit of truffle would, you know, bring out the flavor. Like that. But I remember one American devotee here, there was some, you know, back in the 80s, and some French couple, the traveling, elder French couple, had come and they were traveling around India, and he saw, you know, brought them over, took care of them a little bit while they were in Mayapur. And so he would feed them peanut butter sandwiches. I'm not sure if he put jelly on it, but, you know, whatever. And so he thought he was doing them a favor, because otherwise they have to eat the Indian food. Right? And then, then after he asked, you know, how is everything? How is all these things? How do you like and all that? And they said, yeah, no, it reminds us of World War II. You know, that was the last time they ate one. It was that when the Americans were in France, you know, during the war, they brought their peanut butter. And so sometimes there was nothing else. So we ended up eating bread with peanut butter on it with the Americans. Yeah. So. And that was the last time they ate it, you know, was whatever it was, 1944 or 45, you know. But after that, no, they haven't eaten it.
Culturally superior.
Yes. Yeah. So that's the difficulty with these things, is that it's a matter of all we're doing is going through this to show the absurdity of how when we have a materialistic attachment, then we will interpret everything according to that attachment. So either we'll remove things, in other words, removing them, I mean, you can adjust the interpretation, and it works, then that's fine. If not, you have to remove it. And like we say, that they'll take their stance, and then when it really gets weird, then they'll say it's all, you know, nothingness. But you just, so that's the stages you go through.
What they overlook is that the Vedas are actually eternal.
That's there. And so that's the problem, is that it may be, but that's not the understanding, because, you know, either the moguls messed it up, or, you know, it has to be interpreted according to modern academics, because they're the guys with brains, and all these other guys, they're, you know, they're objective, while then people who take it up as a religious thing, they're subjective, and so they're not using intelligence, so they can't actually understand what's going on, because I'm an academic, and academics are superior. And if you're an American academic, even better. Then it's universal.
Yeah, I mean, I notice how deep that conditioning is in my own self. Like, because I haven't spent that much time in India, I'll come here and I'll bring something from the West, whether it be a razor blade or something.
Yeah.
And yes. Then I'll run out and I'll get, you know, local razor blades. And I'm like, what is this? It's the first shave, and it still hurts like hell. And so immediately my mind, I catch it.
So that's why you see
it. To criticize so many other things that have no relation to that, just because the cultural conditioning is so strong.
All it is that if you go back in time, let's say back to the 60s or 50s, that razor blade that you're buying now in India, it comes from a factory that they bought off of the West after they didn't. So back in the 60s, that was what a razor blade was like. You know what I'm saying? Don't you remember you shave your head once with a razor blade and throw it away?
Yeah.
You know, and if you wanted to shave it backwards, you used a new blade?
Yeah.
Yeah. But now you have a blade and you get 17 shaves out of it. So they were like that before. It's just that factory, now what do you do with it? It's useless. So what do? Sell it to India. The Tata trucks? That's Mercedes. But with the factories that produced Mercedes back in, I think it was it 54, that's it. The Ambassador is a 54 Austin, a British car. You know? You don't see it now. Campicola is still around or it's gone?
It's there in Calcutta.
Have you ever heard of Campicola?
Yeah.
Campicola was making Coca-Cola when America's, the companies left. So the factory's there. They bought Indians bought the company and then make the same thing. And then they call it Campicola. So all it is whatever you see in India that you don't like, that doesn't work good, all it is leftover remnants from the West. So what you don't like is the West. Because when the Indians do the Indian stuff, it's great. It's when they do the Western stuff that is terrible. Right? You know, you have a nice dirt road, they're going down it with their bullock cart or stuff like that, it's fabulous. You know, but when they get the cars in that, which is the Western thing, on the road, then that's where the problem is. Does that make sense? Probably no one's ever looked at it that way, but that's actually the problem. You know, so in other words,
I guess Krishna's kind of protected India in that way, in a sense.
Yeah, to some degree. Like that. I mean, it's still there. You can still find the culture if you know what to look for. It's just like if you're in the West, you know, you have to know what the culture is to see it.
I mean, the culture is...
It's just like, okay, I'm in America, and I see these guys in overalls, no T-shirt, some work, you know, work boots on, like that. Does that make sense? And he's got a big muscle truck that's kind of beat up. And shotguns, or actually two shotguns in his back window of the truck. Now I see that and I go, wow, this is uncultured. So this is America. America is uncultured. Unless, if you're from that place, then you might get, you know, upset about that, you know, that they're uncultured. Now if you are from a different area or a different social environment of America, what would you say? You'd say, oh, no, that this kind of group, social group. We're from another social group that you can relate more to. So we're superior. So why is it when we come here, anything we say, that's India? And then if somebody goes over and says, oh, this is America, then people have a problem with that. The point is that someone who's intelligent knows every place has culture and lack of culture. People who are refined and those who are not. It's everywhere. Does that make sense? You know? So it's that's the, like I was surprised once. I was dealing with one devotee. Really, really refined and gentle, intelligent. Never got angry or upset and whatever went on. I was just thinking, he's such a cultured person. So I was wondering, where is he from? I was surprised when I found out he was from Mexico. You know, because the stereotype of the Mexicans is they're not so sharp and this and that, and they don't, you know, they're a little bit wild and, you know, rough and ready. But he was so refined. Then I found out that that's just the way it is in the whole of Latin America. You know, which then, you know, it's just, they're the ones on the other side of the Mexicans, right? And you'll have there that all these, when you have up there, the high-class people, the cultured people, they're all like that refined. They may speak a different language, they have that. So they're therefore a cultured person from anywhere could relate to a cultured person from anywhere else. A cultured American who is, you know, refined could relate to a European, to the, you know, to Central South American, to African, to, you know, Indian, to Oriental. In other words, it's all the same group. You know, just like before, royalty. They all get along. Didn't matter if they were German royalty, French, English, you know, Italian, Spanish. They all got along. They intermarried because they're the same cultural group. Does that make sense? But you have academics. Then they relate to each other all over the world, because they have the same value system. So the point is when it's based on the Vedas, then that's something, because it's addressing the souls and its relationship to the Lord. Therefore, it can work. Does that make sense? So that's what's being offered. Because, yeah, it is different, but everybody's different. I mean, it's like even you have a neighborhood. Everybody in the neighborhood's different. In one family, everyone's different. So this idea is that they'll all be the same, is that's one, it's impersonal, and two, it's impossible. It's not real, it's an illusion, so therefore quite subjective. Does that make sense? So we're trying to get beyond this understanding. It means you work with that because that's what tools you have, but that's not what the soul has to function at. The tools, yes. But the mentality, no. The tools, that's just what your body and mind and intelligence can do. But the soul is not. You know, just like you take the Bengali. He's in America. He can do all the things that they do in America. The only difference is he'll eat rice. You know, because he's Bengali. He has to eat rice. You know, he doesn't. Pizzas are cool. Everything's cool. It's as snacks. But a meal means rice. So that's there. But the things that you can do and relate and do, that doesn't matter. So this whole thing is they expand. It's expanded too much what is the nature that I have, the gross and subtle body, and its conditioning. They expand it to beyond to their attachments, rather than the areas of its what it can function in. Does that make sense?
You know,
yeah.
Okay. Because I see it myself.
So yeah, that's the whole thing. So that's why I said this is the universal. You know, what's that? Yadaiva Varnashram, that's the eternal, or you say Jiva Dharma, that's the eternal religion. That's what works for everyone. Impersonalistic scholars, however, misinterpret this division of sat and asat, denying common sense reality. They declare that not only material form, but also material substance is unreal. Yeah, so in other words, we're saying the form is unreal simply because it's temporary. It exists, but that's what it means by asat, because it's temporary. But the substance of it, you know, its position of what it is and that it exists, and that's real, but they don't accept either. And they confuse their own spiritual essence with that of the absolute whole, because that's the whole point. They want to be God. I want to be a controller and enjoyer, and I can't be the controller and enjoyer, so I'll be God. Since Brahman just sits there, is God, and Brahman sits there and does nothing, I'll sit there and do nothing. Because doing something gives me trouble. So therefore, I'll just be God doing nothing. Right? Yeah. A Mayavadi philosopher would take the words spoken by the personified Vedas in the preceding prayer, Tri Guna Maya, Maya, Puman Iti Bhidha, as negating any distinction between Paramatma and the Jiva soul. He would claim that since the Jiva's material embodiment is an ephemeral display of the three modes of nature, when the Jiva's ignorance is destroyed by knowledge, he becomes the Paramatma. Right? Why not? He's just still the soul without a body. So he becomes Paramatma, the supreme soul. Bondage, liberation, and the manifestation of the world are all unreal creations of ignorance. But then where's the course? Where's this ignorance? How can it have effect if it's unreal? And how would the removal of something unreal or non-existence create existence? You know. In response to such ideas, the Vedas here clarify the factual relationship between sat and asat. So, sat means the eternal position, and asat means the temporary manifestation. That's what they're meaning. But that temporary manifestation actually exists, so the actual asat is our illusion of what we think that manifestation is. So that's very specific. And we can say in general the material world's illusion. Because but we don't mean the things that are here. We mean how people perceive it. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense? Yeah. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jai Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki, Jai Natai Gaura Premi. Definitely increased. We have class on the first. That's the last one.